Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 192. I am Mel from that there Metal Hammer magazine. Hope you're doing all right as we roll on into Christmas season. It's December. What's going on? How did that happen? I don't understand. It's still 2020, isn't it? Oh, God. We're going to roll into this week's excellent chat with the one and only Diamond Rowe from Tetrarch in a little bit. But before all that, I should remind you, as I do every single week, that we have an issue of Metal Hammer that is out on sale right now. It's one of our biggest issues of the year. We are celebrating 40 years of Metallica, and we are doing that with 40, yes, that's 40 world exclusive interviews that you won't find anywhere else. We've got members of the band, we've got metal legends like Ozzy Osbourne, Rob Halford, Kerry King, others. We've got legendary producers, we've got people that worked with the band in their early days, we've got people that have played with the band, gone on tour with the band. It is the most extensive and in-depth Metallica celebration you'll find anywhere this year, and you've got about one more week to pick it up from UK stores. So get out to your local UK shops, go and find it while you still can. Otherwise, the only place you'll be able to find it is at bit.ly/gethammer. That's bit.ly/gethammer. Once those issues online have gone as well, they will not get restocked. So don't mess around. If you haven't picked up that issue yet, go out and do it right now. Don't say I didn't warn you. This week's show is dedicated to a really cool chat I had just a couple of weeks back with the brilliant Diamond Rowe. She is the guitarist for Atlantean metalist Tetrarch. They are one of my favourite young bands on the metal scene right now. They're one of the bands helping to resurrect and revitalise new metal for the next generation. As a new metal warrior myself, I'm very, very happy about that. Although as Diamond herself will be one of the first to point out, new metal isn't all there is to their music by any means. They've got a great story, they've got a lot of stuff going on in their sound and their influences, and we talk about all of that. So Diamond and I chatted over Zoom a few weeks back to talk about her early influences as a guitarist, what it was like growing up in a hip-hop and country hotbed like Georgia as a young heavy metal fan. We talk about how Tetrarch first came together and the crazy story of how they ended up supporting Avenged Sevenfold for one of their first shows. Just think about that. Young band supporting Avenged, not a bad little rub to get, is it? We talk about their excellent Unstable album from this year and why it took 4 long years for them to follow up their 2017 debut Freak. We do discuss why new metal has become such a big buzzword in heavy music again, and of course I just had to ask her what she thinks of the new Limp Bizkit album, and she also gives me her dream tour of Atlanta as well. I've been to Atlanta very briefly a few years back. I'd love to go back, so I got Diamond to give me the kind of lowdown on what I'd have to hit up if I did that. So I'm going to throw over to that conversation with Diamond right now. As I said, it took a place about 2 weeks back over Zoom, and it sounded a little something like this.
Right, I am here with Diamond Rowe from Tetrarch. How you doing, Diamond?
I'm doing great. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. Do you mind if I ask if Diamond Rowe is your real name?
It is my real name. My full name is actually Diamond Rose Rowe, which is like my parents, I don't know, but yeah. Yep, that's my name.
Awesome. It's just such a rock star name. It's like with a name like that, it's like you have to be playing a guitar on a stage. You know what I mean? It just sounds badass.
Maybe they knew it before I did. I don't know. That's my story.
That's cool. So Tetrarch formed in Atlanta, right? Is that where you grew up?
Yeah. So me and Josh formed Tetrarch in Atlanta. We grew up there, born and raised there, obviously, until we moved to LA recently. But yes, Atlanta is our home.
Cool. So what was Atlanta like to grow up in as a young rock and metal fan? Because to me, with respect to Mastodon, Atlanta is hip-hop country. That's like where a ton of my favorite artists of that side of the game come from.
Yeah, Atlanta's definitely like a hip-hop city for sure. Also kind of country, you know, Georgia in general is like a big country state. Sure. So obviously it wasn't like one of those states where you heard of a lot of bands like heavy bands coming out of and flourishing. Like you had like Mastodon, you have like Attila, but then you have like REM and stuff like that. So it wasn't like a huge metal city or anything like that, but it had its scene, you know. Like you could always meet people that liked it, or if you went to shows or whatever, like if you went to see Slipknot or something like that, you know, there was thousands of people there and you're like, man, where do all these people come from, you know, that like this music? But other than that, it was good. I really liked growing up in Atlanta and in Georgia. It was a good city, good state to be raised in, I think.
That's cool. I mean, you're obviously a fucking killer guitarist, inspiring loads of young players now. I mean, who were the players you really grew up idolizing? Who in the metal scene in particular were you kind of like, I want to do what that person's doing?
I liked guitar players that were like, they were shredders, you know, they were lead guitar players in bands, but they had a lot of personality and character about them, and ones that like you could, you know, people went to shows to see them just as much as they went to see the singer or whatever. So like your Dimebags, Kirk Hammett, Zakk Wylde, you know, Dave Mustaine. I liked Mark Morton, you know, from Lamb of God, Matt and Corey from Trivium, Joe, you know, from Gojira. Just, I really liked like really well-rounded players, shredders, obviously, Slash, stuff like that, but that were like kind of larger than life too. So those are the players that I kind of learned from.
Big personalities. Is that kind of influence, do you feel like that's influenced your standing in Tetrarch? Because it definitely feels like a band of characters. It's not something where it's just like, it's just the singer that does press and they're kind of like the main thing people kind of gravitate towards. People love to talk to you as well, like we're doing this interview. Do you think that's kind of part of that? You're like a naturally big personality, and that's kind of been reflected by the guitarists you used to idolize.
Oh yeah, of course. We, you know, like I definitely didn't want to be, because I feel like, and it's, maybe I'm like the only person that cares. Some people probably just don't care at all. But I feel like nowadays, and there's so many bands with so many amazing guitar players, and like, I couldn't even tell you their name, because it's like, they're so like, the band is just the band. You just know the band as like, this is XYZ band, you know, and like, you don't really know the members individually or anything like that. But I know when we were coming up, every band you liked, you knew every member in it. Like, you can name everybody in Pantera. You can name everyone in Metallica. You can name everyone in Lamb of God, you know, and stuff like that. So that's kind of how we always wanted to be. And that's definitely how I wanted to be as a player. Like, I always wanted to be a player that you knew who I was when I got on stage. And when you heard me play, you knew that was Diamond from Tetrarch. So I think we've always kind of set ourselves up like that, you know.
Awesome. And how did you guys actually first get together in the first place then? How did Tetrarch come together?
Josh and I actually met, we went to like a small private school in here in Atlanta, and you know, it was a really small school, so it was like literally in our grade, I think we had the biggest grade in the school, and there was like 70 people in our grade. Like, it was really small, and I was just getting into rock and metal and everything like that, so I knew he was like one of the only people in the school that remotely liked rock and like metal and played guitar. So I knew I wanted to be in a band, and I knew he jammed with one of our mutual friends who played drums. So like, I asked my friend, hey, can you ask Josh if I could like join the band, you know, cause I want to play. And Josh said, no, he didn't want a girl in the band at the time. But that quickly was resolved. So when I finally got to jam with him and everything, that was kind of
that sounded ominous. What do you mean it was quickly resolved?
That sounds like I went like held him hostage until he said yes. No, he changed his mind. He was convinced to change his mind, and we just started jamming, and like literally from that day on, like that was in like seventh grade. We were like 12. We have been like pursuing this ever since, you know, like it's pretty crazy, you know.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah, I mean, it feels like certainly kind of here in England, let's say, it feels like you're fairly fresh on the scene, but you've obviously been doing this for quite a while now, because I think 2007 you formed, is that right?
Yes, that's when we played like our first show, 2007, 2008, like our first actual venue show. I know a lot of people kind of, you know, we started touring in like 2011. That's when we did like our first tour, like DIY around the country. But a lot of people just know us from mainly from Freak, like starting 3 years ago. So it's like a lot of people are like, oh, you guys are brand new. And we're like, it's been a minute.
Yeah, this ain't our first rodeo.
No.
Is it true? I read that in 2011, you supported Avenged Sevenfold, Alter Bridge and Seether in Atlanta. Is that true?
We did, yeah. So it was really funny. That story's really funny. We used to have a local radio station in Atlanta. It was called Project 961. And they were a super cool station. Like, over here in America, we don't have, like, a lot of, like, rock radio stations that play, like, heavier stuff. But they kind of did. So they were always having, like, these competitions for shows that came to town. You know, like, where a band from Atlanta could like open for like bigger shows. So they had a show, it was like Bullet for My Valentine and something else that were coming over, playing one of the medium-sized venues there, like kind of like the 2,500 cap room or something like that. And there was a competition to play it. So we, the competition was something like you get your friends to vote, you know, something like that. And we entered it, and there was another band there of like these like 50-year-old dudes, right? And so we're like, we're going to kill this band. We're going to kill them. We're going to win this. And they were like high school girls, dude. They literally like would sit online all day and vote and had all their friends vote. And like we looked up and they had like 2,000 votes in an hour. And we're like, that's not fair, you know? So we're sitting there voting all day and we still couldn't catch up with them because they were like doing the same thing. So we like complained to the radio station. We're like, they're not doing this legitimately. Like, we want to win this.
And you dubbed them in, I can't believe it.
So we got so mad and they were like calling us names and stuff. It was so silly. We were like young. We were so young and they were like these old men. They were like calling us names online and stuff. So anyways, needless to say, we lost. So we lost that competition. But when Avenged Sevenfold came to town, the radio, like we ended up having all of our friends like blow up the radio station's like email and basically be like, we want Tetrarch to play a show or something like this. And like, we gave everybody the personal email of the project of the music manager over there or whatever. I feel so bad. I would never do that now. And so she was like, you can't have all your friends email us. They got so mad. But literally like when Avenged Sevenfold came to town, we got an email from one of the DJs, his name's Swan. And he was like, no competition. You guys just want to play with Avenged Sevenfold. And we were like, oh my God, yes. So like all of our hollering and emails and complaining got us that show. But it was awesome because we didn't have to compete for it. We just got asked.
That's so crazy. I mean, were you a big Avenged fan? Because obviously talking about personalities in metal, they were one of the few bands of their era that really brought back that kind of like gunslinging guitar player hero kind of thing with Sin.
Yeah,
and, you know, they had personalities right across the band as well. Like, everyone knows who the Rev is, everyone knows who Johnny Christ is, etc., etc. So like, were you a big fan of them as well?
Yeah, we were big Avenged Sevenfold fans, and we kind of were, they were right up our alley as far as the band's concerned, because they kind of wrote that line, like they were metal, like, you know, they had shredding, Sinister is an amazing guitar player. But they also had like those big choruses, like really catchy choruses. People who weren't metal fans could like them as well. So like they're kind of right up our alley as far as like a band that we kind of looked up to at the time, and still do. So it was a cool experience for sure.
Awesome. What was it like actually kind of getting to go out and play on a stage like that? It must have been quite different to what you were used to at that point.
Yeah, at that point we were used to, because that was actually right before our very first tour. Like we hadn't even... when we had done like little weekend warriors to like Florida, you know, or whatever, but we had never gone out for like more than 4 days a week. So it was definitely the biggest stage we had ever played. but it was really cool. We had still played a ton of shows, so we felt comfortable. I think actually we ended up going over our time by like, 2 minutes, and the stage manager, like when we got off stage, he was so mad at us. He was like, you'll never play shows like this ever again if you're late. And we're like, well, I'm just devastated. I'm like, oh my God, we're never gonna play.
You were beefing with everyone in the early days.
We didn't mean any harm by it. Like, we literally went over, I think probably like a minute or two, and he was so mad. Like, he made us feel so small. But it was cool because, like, I think Sean Morgan from Seether, he watched our set, and when we got off stage, he was, like, so hyped on it. So that was kind of, like, a confidence boost. It was really cool, especially because we had just started, you know. So it was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was a very good experience eating catering for the first time backstage, you know, and, like, I think we ate next to Miles Kennedy. It was just, like, it was just a really cool experience. We went and had a, we partied with, not, we didn't drink or anything, but we went to their backstage party. It was Tremonti was back there, obviously, and Morgan Rose from Seven Dust was back there and stuff. So it was really cool. It was like a cool experience for us for a beginning, you know, type of thing. So it'll be something to remember. Yeah,
of course. You eventually got your first album out in 2017, Freak. That was self-released The follow-up, Unstable, didn't come for 4 years, which is quite a long stretch for a young band, especially when you've made that initial first impact. You've got your kind of foot on the ladder, and then you don't really get it takes a little while to kind of capitalize on any momentum you've got. So what was the situation there? Was it kind of hard getting enough traction after the first record to get back in the studio? Were you waiting for the right deal? Like, what was the situation?
It was interesting. I think Freak was kind of like, it was our first full length, because we had only ever done EPs before that. It was our first full length. It was the first body of music that we had ever done in this style. So everything we had done before, like all the EP, like we started as when we were young in high school as like a straight thrash band. Like we were like Kill 'Em All Metallica, just straight thrash, like 10 minute songs with 5 minute solos. Like that's just what we were. Listening back, it wasn't too horrible though, but that's what we were. And then we kind of migrated to like kind of metalcore. So like it was like very like, you know, the screaming verses, you know, with the choruses, like the Bullet From a Valentine flavor type metalcore thing. And then with Freak, we kind of started coming into our own, where it was the first time we were trying like weird guitar sounds, or first time we were trying Josh singing in different ways, or just focusing on songwriting. It was like the first for a lot. So when we did it, it was kind of like we went in the studio. We didn't have a big plan for the record. We were still like very young as far as like how to plan a record, you know. So we went in, we did half the record. We went back a few months later, did the other half of the record. And when we came out, it was like kind of like we still didn't know how we were gonna, you know, like put it out to the world. We decided to do it independent, but it was still like it was kind of a slow process because we didn't even have PR back then. We didn't have anything, so it was like, how do we do this? We ended up getting our publicist here, one of them. And from that point on, I feel like it just kind of helped us develop like the story of how to really market the band and how to reach out to people. We got our first interest and this all took like probably like, cause we didn't get Maria until like a year after the record came out or something. So it was kind of like this very slow process until then. But after that, you know, we met Jose Mangan at XM Radio, who started playing Freak, on, you know, Liquid Metal and Octane, which was a huge thing for us. We started getting a lot of press, a ton of American press. Like it was something we had never experienced before. And the traction really started to pick up. So like, I say all that to say the traction on Freak didn't pick up until about a year after it came out. And then it slowly kept building. So it was like about 2 years in or so, we were like, okay, time to start focusing on the next record. But it just was like a slow but upward trajectory. So, but that was fine. We learned a lot and we built a lot during that time. So
that's fair enough. I mean, it did ultimately lead to Unstable, which is, as I said, kind of like felt like a bit of a breakthrough album for you over here, especially in the UK, I'm sure in other territories as well. I mean, it's such a great record. It's one of my favorite albums of this whole year. Like, it's interesting to hear you talk about how you started off as a thrash band and then you went to the metalcore thing and you've kind of evolved from that over time, because, you know, there's absolutely kind of those metalcore elements present on this album as well. And I can hear some of the influences you talk about in your guitar playing and everything else. But to me, as a child of the new metal generation, it just ticks so many of those boxes from that era for me as well. Like, I hear Korn in this album, I hear Slipknot, I hear Edema, I hear Linkin Park. It's a smorgasbord of artists from that era for me, which is part of the reason I love it so much, because that's where I came from. That's my generation's like thing. But it still sounds very much like an album made in 2021 as well. It doesn't sound throwback. It doesn't sound too derivative. So where did those kind of artists first come onto your radar as a young metal fan? Because you haven't really talked about any of those kind of bands, but I hear their DNA all over this album.
I mean, honestly, from the very beginning. So, you know, when you ask me about, or when anyone asks me about my influences as a guitar player, they're different than maybe some of the other music that I just listen to as like a fan, you know? So like coming up, when I first, my first like rock album was Nirvana's greatest hits, or it was either Nevermind or something. But at the same time, I bought System of a Down's Toxicity. So, like, those were the first two introductions to, like, rock and metal that I had. Those were, and I listened to those records constantly. Like, that's the only thing I had to really show me anything. And then at the time, you know, when you're young and you're getting into a new kind of music or something, you listen to the radio. Like, I listened to the radio constantly, and at the time they were playing I remember Linkin Park, Somewhere I Belong was every other song on the radio. So obviously I became like a giant Linkin Park fan. And I remember I went to see Linkin Park probably like 5 times in 1 year. Like, they were like one of my all-time favorite bands. At the same time, Disturbed, Slipknot, of course, Korn, all of them were like dominating at that time. And so they were like some of my favorite bands. They may not have been the bands that I like would pick up my guitar and play to, like when I was trying to learn to be like a lead guitar player. That was my Zakk Wylde and Alexi Lejos and all that. But what I loved everything. And some of my favorite bands were those bands. Still are my favorite bands, you know. So I think that's where they came in early when I was very young, because that's what was popular at the time, you know.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was an amazing era for metal in a lot of ways. I mean, people would like to rag on nu metal because it wasn't like true metal or it was like fashionable or whatever. But, you know, it was an era where Chocolate Starfish by Limp Bizkit sold 1 million copies in a week. And the week after that came out, Hybrid Theory came out. And then like the year after that, like you said, you had Toxicity. You said countless huge albums just dominating the charts. What do you think it was about that movement that kind of just made it explode in the way it did?
I mean, what I think was cool about it, and what I still think is cool about it, this is why I love that genre so much, is I feel like metal, how do I put this? Metal and like hard rock in the beginning, like say you were in like the hair metal era, there's still like a group of people that like it, you know, like, and a group of people that hate it. You move forward, you get into grunge. There's a group of people that love it and a group of people that freaking hate it. You know, it's just kind of like very polarizing. Nu metal was the same, but I feel like it was like the first time heavy music touched people outside of just metal fans, you know, just rock fans. Like, you go to a party, and I was actually watching this on YouTube the other day or something like that, or, you know, my dad's a tour promoter, so like we're on the road, like we went out on one of his arena tours. It was like a rap tour, but you can play like Chop Suey, or, you know, you can play a song like that in any setting and people can sing every song to you and like get hyped on it. Like, they don't care if they're like hardcore rap fans. Like, so I think that era was the first time that people like that music and hard rock and metal connected to like the masses. Linkin Park, like, you go to, Josh is like a huge karaoke fan. He goes to karaoke bars all the time and he'll sing like, you know, any Limp Bizkit, I mean Limp Bizkit, any Linkin Park song, and like the whole bar knows it. You know what I'm saying? Like, the preppiest kids know the stuff. So I think it was super cool that they were able to cross over like that, because I think they had elements that like your common person could get into. They sang, you know, they didn't just, the vocals were something they could sing back. Lyrics were something they could sing back. They appealed to the youth. Like, they appealed to younger people. As goofy as some of the styles were, it was still something that people could catch on to. So I just think, it's because it was just so, so easy for people to latch on to. Like, and I know, like, your average metal fan would be like, ugh, you know, like, that's so lame that, like, my rap friend likes this or whatever. But I thought that was super, I think it's super cool. And that's why those bands are still so huge. Like, they're still so huge and they're still gaining fans every day, because it's something that, like, it's crossover too. Young kids can get into it when they're first getting into rock and metal, you know, before they get into bands like At the Gates, you know, or whatever. Like, they can listen to Linkin Park and it can get them into it slowly without them, you know, being turned off by it because it's so heavy. So there's just a lot of cool things about it, I think.
No, I agree. I mean, that is literally the journey I took. I wouldn't have got to At the Gates without Limp Bizkit. That's like, exactly. Genuinely true. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that you mentioned about young kids getting into it and the kind of legacy of nu metal still being relevant. I don't even feel like it's just relevant. I feel like it's actually grown even more over the past few years. I feel like you're really starting to see, I mean, I wouldn't call you a new band, of course, but you're starting to see more modern bands and younger bands all over the place kind of utilizing nu metal in parts of their sound. Everyone from yourselves to Tala to Wargasm, even like Spirit Box have a song on that album that sounds super corn-like.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you think we're seeing nu metal become such a big player right now in the sound of modern metal again? Because I really didn't hear that influence as much 5 or 10 years ago.
I feel like it's probably a couple reasons. One, I feel like the era of kids, that people that were kids when it was blowing up and that, you know, was around when it was coming out, I feel like are now kind of peaking and like starting to grow in their band careers. And I think that like, you're just seeing that because it's like, this is what we grew up on. But also I think because, you know, music was always evolving. And so we went the route of everybody was trying to be literally as heavy as they could possibly be. And that kind of peaked. And I think now it seems like bands are finding again the value in like melody and big choruses and, but try dynamics in music. And I feel like when you look back at some of the biggest bands to do that, they came out in that nu metal era with like your Disturbs and your Linkin Parks and all that kind of stuff. And those were the influences that we had. So I think that's a big part of it as well. I mean, you can't deny some of the biggest bands in the world. Like you can talk as much shit about them as you possibly want. But at the end of the day, when you look at successful bands, you can't deny these bands are huge and they were huge for a reason. So I think those are probably a couple reasons why. Like, it's just like kind of music has evolved back to that being, you know, a value that, you know, melody and mass appeal and being versatile and stuff like that. And I think we have some of the best examples of that in that nu metal era.
Yeah, definitely. And why do you feel like, again, it's not the only part of your sound at all, but why do you feel like it's ended up playing quite a prominent part of your sound now, given that, like you said, at one point you were thrash and then you were kind of more leaning towards the metalcore side of things. I mean, even everything like the kind of the way the album's produced, the newer one is like, it really reminds me of like kind of Untouchable Zero Chord in particular. It's like so vividly done and it's so well executed. So why do you think that's kind of played such a big part for you at this stage?
So it's funny when we first, like, obviously with Freak, we touched on some of those elements and, but we were kind of nervous about it. So we were like, and I genuinely can say it wasn't on purpose. It was just like, you know, I'm a huge, next to Metallica, Korn's my all time favorite band. So obviously some of those influences are going to come out. And when we started experimenting with Freak, you know, I really like, I can sit with guitar pedals and make weird sounds all day long. It's just like, I love making textural stuff like that. So when I did it on Freak, I did it on a couple songs and it was like kind of had that Korn-esque feel. And I was just like, oh, I don't know if we like should do this. It's very different from anything we've ever done. And Josh was like, fuck it. Let's just try it. You know, like who cares? So we tried it on a couple songs and it went over really well, like super well. So on Unstable, we were like, you know what, forget it. We're going to jump in head first. We're going to do everything that we've ever wanted to try, whether it's weird sounds, whether it's Josh doing something creepy with his voice or something kind of rappy and Spitfire, like whatever, we're going to just try this stuff. But we never thought in our head, like, let's be a nu metal band or let's like, we just kind of were, we finally were like, let's go off of some of the influences that are like some of our all-time favorite bands and make it our own. And those were our all-time favorite bands. You know, we just had never touched on those influences before because we always were trying to, I think before we were always trying to do what like we felt was popular. Like we always were trying to like, okay, like let's be a metalcore band because metalcore is what's in. But we finally were just like, you know what, forget that. Like, because we want to be genuine to who we want to be and the type of band that we want to be. And like, those influences started coming out, and it's crazy when people started being like, y'all sound new metal. We were like, it wasn't a conscious decision, but when we were in the studio, we did take a lot of, like when Dave asked us, like, what kind of mixes do you like? We were like, Gojira's album, you know, The Way of All Flesh, and we said, like, Korn's their last album. Those were the two like mixes that we loved, you know? And you know, so maybe that polished heavy mix, that's why we got something like that. But yeah, it was really just about us like picking influences that we had initially always been scared to use, but they were always there. Like I said, Korn, my all time favorite band, like, literally equal to Metallica, like all time favorite band. Linkin Park was a huge part of our, you know, growing up just from listening to their songs and learning how to be songwriters. You know, Slipknot, Jim Root's one of my all time favorite guitar players in the world, and literally the first heavy band I ever got into next to Lamb of God. So like I guess it's kind of natural that they started to come out, but I'm glad they did, because we, like I said, we've always been a band that kind of walked the middle. So like we've always wanted to not be boxed in. We wanted to be able to put out a song that's super heavy and like people know that's Tetrarch, but also be able to put out a song like You Never Listen that's like very mid-tempo and has a million choruses, and you can put it on the radio and people are like, that's Tetrarch. Like we wanted to set ourselves up as a band that could do both. And hopefully we're well on the way. So
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I totally respect that, you know, bands hate it when they're kind of pigeonholed, like you kind of, yeah, you call a band a metalcore band and I went on a metalcore band, and like, you know, apart from the thrash bands, they just love that shit. You're like, they're,
oh,
like,
they love it.
But I love those guitar tones you talked about, by the way, the kind of stuff, like so cool, and it's so evocative of like certain artists and styles, and it really works. Mm-hmm. One of the artists you mentioned earlier was Limp Bizkit, and yep, you know, going back to the kind of thing of nu metal having like a renaissance right now, it feels like Limp Bizkit have become this really cool current. I mean, I'm a Limp Bizkit diehard, so they've always been cool for me.
Me
right?
Too. But dude, I'm like, not gonna lie to
good,
you.
Okay, good. We're friends here. Don't worry. But yeah. it seems like in the kind of the pop culture discourse, like Bizkit have become kind of current and newsworthy again, and yeah, like people are like excited about them again. Fred Durst did the Dad Vibes thing that totally broke the internet. Everyone went crazy for it. The new album's getting loads of hype. As someone who's really happy this is happening, I'm just saying to a fellow new metal head, like, where's this come from? Why is Limp Bizkit like on everyone's lips again?
First of all, people don't understand that Fred Durst is a freaking genius. Like, people think he's like this dumb dude and he's like, oh, I hate Fred Durst. But no, Fred Durst, it plays all of y'all. Like, he's so smart. He's a smart dude. He knows how to market perfectly, and he knows what people want to hear from his band. Like, he's just a very, very, and C, he's a very smart guy. I think it really helped that Lollapalooza performance, when they put that, like, when they dropped that online, it, like, broke the internet for, like, a few days. it was sick. Me and Josh both watched it a few times. But I also think, you know, like, he had that whole Dad Vibes thing with it, like, the whole look that makes people talk, you know, everyone's like, why does he do that? I'm like, well, you're talking about it, so that's why he did it. And then this new album is honestly really sick. Like, I really like it. I've been listening to it for a few days. So I just think, like, it was, like, right time and with the right minds, you know. New metal does kind of have that little resurgence thing going on right now. And then they dropped the Lollapalooza performance, which, we're at a time where people want to look at it and look and see what Limp Bizkit is doing. Because, like, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago, everyone would be like, ugh, Limp Bizkit, who cares, you know? But now we're at a point where it's like, people are, like, starting to dig new. They want to respect new metal again. I don't know. So it was a good time for him to do that. And he, like I said, he has the right marketing going on. And the new album literally kind of sounds like you're listening to an early 2000s Limp Bizkit record. So I just think it's a mixture of him being so smart, the marketing, the timing. Timing's perfect. So, yeah.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing, Fred Durst. Like, they are very much in on the joke, which I don't think people ever really realized.
Oh, yeah. Josh was like, I feel like he's just trolling everybody. Like, he kind of is, though.
All the time. So, yeah, you really like the new record. That's awesome. What was it you kind of like about it? Because I was quite surprised by the fact, like, first Limp Bizkit album in 10 years. It's like half an hour long. There's songs on there that are like less than 2 minutes. We said on the podcast recently that we kind of wanted a bit more from it because we like it, but like they could have done more. Yeah. So what was your kind of take on the record as a whole then?
So to be honest, I liked it because there are certain elements that I hadn't heard from them in a long time. So, and this is from like maybe just from, even just from a musician, but like having West Borland, like hearing some of his riffs that were actually like very like West Borland type riffs on there. There wasn't like a million, but there was some that like the first song Out of Style, the second song, I forgot what it's called, but
Dirty Rotten Biscuit.
Dirty Rotten Biscuit, exactly. It's like when those riffs come in, it feels like you're listening to like Nookie or something like that, where like it's a very West Borland riff that makes you just want to, you know, just, you know, get hyped or whatever. So I liked that. There were a couple parts on the record where they went into like those like signature clean guitar, like kind of drowsy Limp Bizkit, like bridges that I always loved about Limp Bizkit, like you would hear on like Rearranged or something like that. So I thought that was sick. And even like the songs that were like really rappy, that you're like, the songs are like, what was that? I feel like they did that a lot in like the late 90s. Like Korn had some of those on a couple of their records where you're just like, what did I just listen to? You know what I'm saying? But yeah. I like that I could say that because like, it's very nostalgic for me to be able to say like, what kind of crazy mess did I just listen to for the last minute? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Or like,
it's kind of almost like a throwback to like the skits you used to get.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like Eminem and Limp Bizkit and those kind of artists.
Exactly. So I think that it was just like a very, like, it's a very nostalgic record kind of in senses like that, to where I'm like, okay, when I listen to Limp Bizkit, like I want to hear these things as opposed to like, you know, I want to hear Limp Bizkit that I loved when I was younger, and not so much like, not that I don't want him to evolve, but you know, like not so much of like some new and improved Limp Bizkit that I don't recognize. I want to hear something I recognize from him. Like, so that's why I enjoyed it, honestly.
Big West Borland riffs and Fred Durst rapping about Dirty Biscuits. That's like,
what, exactly. What, right? Like, that's what I want from Limp Bizkit. Like, come on.
Very fair. How's the rest of your year looking? You've had the album out. I guess, mm-hmm. Well, we're nearly at the end of the year now. I guess kind of the next few months is what I mean, going into next year as well. What's the kind of immediate and more long-term future looking like for Tetrarch?
Yeah, actually on Monday we leave for tour with Atreyu and Crown the Empire and Saul. So that'll be good. We'll be on the road with them for 6 weeks. And then we go home for Christmas. And then right now in February we go out on the Voragos cruise. So that's like with Mudvayne and like Seether and Chevelle. And like there's a lot of bands on that cruise. So that'll be fun. We've already confirmed some festivals for next year, and we have some tour offers coming in for like early spring of next year. So we should have a pretty like busy like touring schedule. Like I know we wanted this touring schedule for Unstable to be like a jam packed 2 years. So that's kind of what we're starting on Monday. It's just like we leave for tour and hopefully we have a break for Christmas, maybe like January-ish break. And then we're back out on the road, and hopefully overseas too, which we were talking about this morning. Hopefully overseas too, and not too long. So basically just a ton of touring coming up here.
Badass. Speaking of touring, you've already got to play with some pretty amazing names so far. Are there any other bands that you'd really love to go on the road with if given the chance?
So I say this to people all the time. Like, we're one of those bands where we very much... we want to be headliners. So like our end goal is to be like one of the biggest headliners in our genre. Like it's a very, everyone's always like, it's pretty lofty, but I mean, why? I've never done anything to have mediocre results. So that is like our biggest goal. So obviously touring with any band that helps us grow and, you know, be in that upward trajectory towards that is fine with us, is, you know, but we obviously as a fan, if you ask me that, and you're like, what bands would you want to watch every night? Gojira would be like at the top of my list. Like that's one of my all-time favorite bands. They're over here now. So them for sure. My guitar tech actually like is cheating on me right now with them. He's like teching for them. And I'm like, ugh. so Gojira, obviously Korn, Limp Bizkit. Actually, I was talking to somebody recently. And I was like, oh, I would love to go out with them. Slipknot, you know. just your Deftones, your typical, like, obviously all the bands I pick are like freaking massive, but like, yeah, that's just what I would love to go out with and just kind of just learn every night and watch, you know.
Awesome. Would go to all those tours. I've been to Atlanta briefly. It's a really, really cool city. If I was coming back there as a completely clueless Brit, and you had like one day to give me the ultimate tour of Atlanta, where would we be going and why? What are the essential stops?
Woo! So that's tough. Because I'm glad you asked me this, because actually we've lived in LA now for 6 years, going on 6 years. So we play Atlanta in like 2 weeks, but we have 3 days off there. And one of my friends is flying in to, I think, hang out there for the 3 days. And so she's like, I really want to know about Atlanta. And I'm like, crap, like, what are we gonna do? So it's really hard. I mean, Atlanta, when you've lived there and you grew up there, you know, you're kind of like, oh, Atlanta's boring. So like, it's basically trying to figure out, like, we have one of the nicest aquariums in the country now, if not like the nicest one. We have the Coke factory, you know, you can go try, like, if you're into Coke or soda, you can go try like all the Coke from around the world. If you're into like nature, we have some like the best hiking and the best, like, you know, rivers and waterfalls and lakes and stuff in the South. I'm a big fishing nerd, so like I have to take them to like the lake to go fishing. Atlanta has a lot of good food, amazing restaurants. There's like a burger place called the Vortex.
I knew you were gonna say Vortex. That was the when I went to Atlanta, that was the first time I'd ever been to America, and I went to Vortex. And yeah. Again, as a kind of British person, I had my mind blown by being able to order a cheeseburger on which the buns were grilled cheese sandwiches.
Exactly. I was like, what? It's so funny. Like, people, whenever they come from other countries and stuff and they see like American food like that, they're like, what is this? And I'm like, dang, that's why we're fat. That sucks. But yeah, exactly. So you knew exactly what I was going to say. So we'd have to go get you some good Southern food then this time, because you already had the burgers checked off the list. So yeah, just stuff like that. Like, literally, it's kind of like what you're into. Like, some of my friends are very into like nature, so like you got to do the more nature stuff. Some of my friends are like, I don't want to be outside at all. So then you got to do, you know, some of the other indoor stuff. But there's something for everybody. You know what I'm saying?
Awesome, that's badass. Yeah. Diamond Row, thank you so much for chatting to us. Congratulations on the album. And yeah, I'm sure we'll be seeing you over on these shores sooner rather than later. I hope so.
I hope soon. If it goes as we said this morning, it'll be very soon. So, and I thank you guys too for all the support and everything. It means a lot to us over here. So,
our pleasure. Keep it up. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Right, that's it from Diamond and I. Thank you so much to Diamond for giving us her time to talk on this week's Metal Hammer podcast. Don't forget to go and pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer magazine that's out right now, our spectacular celebration of 40 years of Metallica. And while you're at it, go listen to that Tetrarch album, Unstable, as well. It's so, so good. Made it into my top albums of the year, which we'll be revealing on the podcast soon as well, by the way. In the meantime, we'll see you here next week, where we'll be revealing the brand new issue of Metal Hammer magazine, our big end of year issue. It's a big one, folks. Don't miss it. We'll see you then. Goodbye.